Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be. Welcome back to the Same Old Arsenal podcast, Four Men and a Mic edition. I hope you're all very well. I hope you're all keeping safe. And all that malarkey, you know what? I'm getting sick of saying that kind of stuff now. I think it's all kind of calming down a bit now, isn't it? The old coronavirus, it certainly is over here anyway. I hope you're all well. Sorry that we didn't come on Sunday with Graham. I had a bit of a wobble and I fell off the wagon, but I'm all right again now. So my apologies. We'll bring that show to you as soon as we can. We might do something on Sunday if he is available. Danny's not with us this evening. Unfortunately, he's got a bit of a dicky tummy, so he's watching. He's actually there in the chat box. Hello, mate. How are you? Hope you get better soon. I hope that bug goes away soon, mate. So, lads, James, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. Always better when I'm graced by your beautiful face.
Oh, well, you know, I don't like to say it, but, you know, when someone else says it, just, you know. Well, if I had a beautiful face, I wouldn't be sitting here anyway. Talking of beautiful faces and sitting here, Chris, how are you?
Hello. I was about to say I'm fabulous, but we're not allowed to celebrate anymore. So. I'm just going to keep it low key and say I'm alive, I'm breathing. And I think that is acceptable. And I think we're allowed to say things like that. But should we just go to the Wolves Twitter feed to find out, see if it's
yeah,
okay?
Yeah, do it actually. Yeah, just go over there and see can we talk about tonight's game. In the chat, hello, Danny. Hello, GB. Hello, Hambo. And hello, oh, my dearie me. I'm not even going to try and pronounce that one.
Albrecht Schultz.
Yeah. Albrecht Schultz.
Albrecht.
Albrecht Schultz. Albrecht Schultz. I hope I've got that right. Thank you very much for coming along. James, we sat here last week. We were all a bit nervous about going to Wolves. We come away with the 3 points. What a performance.
Yeah, where to start, mate? Again, another sending off for us. Seems to be a common theme. But the performance, the result, everything I could have hoped for. I thought we started that game a lot better than I was expecting us to. We really came out the blocks firing, you know, after those games against Burnley and Liverpool, where it was a pretty slow, sluggish start. This was, I don't want to say the polar opposite, but we certainly started with a lot more ambition. We looked a lot more ruthless. And we really took the game to Wolves, which is something we haven't done in recent weeks. And after having those, as I say, pretty poor performances, we kind of got the camel off our back, and yeah, it was really good to see.
Absolutely. That trip to Dubai, Chris, seems to have worked.
Done him a treat, didn't it? Did him an absolute treat. And do you know what? I was just looking at some of the numbers from the actual game, because, you know, after the, I'm sure we'll get to the goal and the sendings off and stuff like that. But it felt to me like we were under the cosh a lot more than the numbers actually suggest. I mean, they had a lot more possession than us, but when you go down to 10 men, you expect that. But they had 15 shots, we had 12. We only had two on target, which sums up us really in terms of our striking threat, I guess. But they only had four. They had a lot more passes than us. But I feel like most of their the weighting of stats seems to have been from that 20 minutes from when we were down to 10 men. So it was massive. It was battling. It was like the backs to the wall type stuff that reminded me of the Liverpool game. And even though it's terrifying when you actually watch it, when you then think back at it the next day, like I don't know about you guys, but I was like randomly just walking through, because I work from home, I was just walking through my house, like I need to go and get a drink of water, and I go downstairs and I'd be walking down the stairs going, come on, just like for no reason whatsoever. It's like 12 o'clock on a Friday afternoon and I've suddenly been reminded that we beat Wolves, come on. Although I didn't do it too much, obviously, you know, keep it low key.
Yeah, got to keep it low key, because like you said, look, the Wolves don't like us celebrating. I hope now if we beat them at the Emirates, the celebrating is twice as loud and twice as that will be good fun. That will be good fun. Yeah. James, some people on social media were actually like downgrading this win. People, oh, it was just Wolves. We should be beating Wolves. You know, we beat them with 10 men. Oh, it's not great. You know, it wasn't great football and this, that and the other. And then, of course, they come down and go up the road and do the others over 2-0 quite easily that we were talking about off air. Now, I do believe, if my stats are correct, that Aaron Ramsdale and is it Jose Sarr are leading the way with clean sheets, I think.
It's Edison at the top, Alisson and Ramsdale joint on 11. And then Jose Sarr just underneath him.
Well, I mean, even still, for Wolves, you know, they've got a good... that proves to me that they've got a good defence, right? So we go up there, we beat them, and then we don't just beat them, we beat them in 10 men. And then my point is, they come down to Spurs and absolutely annihilate them, in my opinion. That 1-0 away victory, you know, down to 10 men, doesn't look too shabby all of a sudden, does it?
No, not at all. And I don't know how you can really downplay that result. Yeah. I think maybe it's because the performance when we went down to 10 men was a little bit, I don't want to say average. It was a really good defensive performance, especially from, I thought, Rob Holding when he came on. Wolves' tactic of kind of just crossing it relentlessly and him dealing with every single cross that came in. It seems to be, it's not an ideal transition, but when you go from 11 to 10 and you're able to bring someone like Rob Holding on, and go into a deep block and know that you're going to be okay because you've got him to do that, I think it's a huge asset. Because in the past, when we have gone down to 10 men and you've kind of got no choice but to go in that deep block, we've not had the option to kind of go to a back five. Or if we have, we've not had the caliber of player to go into that low block. Mm. And we've ended up throwing the game. So to hold on with 10 men for a good half hour period against the top side away from home with the likes of Podence, Raul Jimenez, it's a really good result. It's a really, really good result. They've only lost one more game than us this season.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of sides that are going to go to Wolves, you know, even playing in their own home turf and win that game, Spurs being the prime example of that. Mm. And there's a lot of other teams that will go to Molineux and really, really struggle. Top teams, I think, you know, the likes of Liverpool, City will go there and have a tough game. And I think, you know, granted, we didn't create a lot of opportunities. I think we knew going into the game there would only be a few chances in this game and maybe a few half chances. But I thought we created three really good opportunities to score. First of all, the corner where we got the goal. Gabriel's done really well to toe poke that home. But then also that beautiful bit of play with Saka and Odegaard. And if you've got a top striker in the box, they put it low and underneath the keeper. Unfortunately, Lacazette's put it straight at Sarr. Yeah. And then that other opportunity Lacazette had, which I think is a bit more difficult than people are making out, given the angle it was. But again, you'd expect a top striker to finish that. So on another day, we could have won this game. I don't think we'd have won it any more than 2-0, but the chances were there. We certainly did create them. It's not a case of we did nothing in this game and we're lucky to win it. We did do enough to win this game. Yeah. And then we're defensively stout to see it out. So, yeah, really, really pleased with the performance. And no way you can downplay that result.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I saw it, you know. I mean, now, probably looking at the wrong accounts, you know, the Arteta out as well. You know, everything's Mikel Arteta's fault. Beast the best. That's what I was looking at. That is exactly what I was looking at there. It's not clean sheets. It was expected goals prevented. They're both up there, I believe. Chris The goal. Coming from, you know, like it comes from an outlet you wouldn't expect. Like James says there, Gabriel in the right place at the right time to poke that home. But I want to go back to what he said about Lacazette. A lot of people, James has said there about the angle. I'm going to respectfully disagree. And I'm with him on what he says about, you know, any top striker, that is bread and butter. That, you know, that's it's going in the goal. I mean, if
of course it is.
If you put, you know, I mean, I can go back now and talk about Thierry Henry, but if you put Tiesco, it's in. Do you know, it's in. Sanchez, Alexis Sanchez, it's in. Robin Van Persie, perhaps, probably, it's in.
Martinelli
would probably put that away, yeah. But overall, even though we're talking about that miss, I thought Lacazette played really well against Wolves.
Yeah, he did. But the problem is it's a bit like the Granit Xhaka syndrome, isn't it? The Granit Xhaka syndrome is basically he could have a good game, but then he boots one into his own net. Or he can have a good game and then his shirt pulls and concedes a penalty. Or he can have a good game and then he picks up a silly yellow card having shirt pulled halfway through the game and, you know, he gets himself sent off. So, and people only ever think about those stupid moments. And with Lacazette, people only think, and I'm the same, I'm guilty of this as well. I think back on that game, all I'm thinking about is that missed chance, which again, Martinelli was slipped in almost that exact same position and puts the ball away and against West Ham. And I don't know about you, but like it just, you just felt it was going in when Martinelli did it. You don't feel it's going in with Lacazette. There was also another chance in the first half where Cedric's crossed the ball in and Lacazette sort of right on the 6 yard box, try and head the ball. And he just sort of almost completely misses the ball. So there's just instances like that, which stick in your mind. And because of that, you end up finishing the game and thinking, well, that's why we haven't won this 2 or 3 nil. Cause we haven't got a guy that puts it away. So I think that's that kind of Xhaka syndrome of you only remember the bad stuff. And when he's doing bad stuff, and it seems to happen every week at the moment where he's missing big chances, it just makes it feel worse.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. I think I just want Lacazette. I know there's a lot of people out there that his stats are poor. They are poor. There's no getting away from it. I think he's only scored, what's he scored? 2 goals from open play this season, I think. I mean, that's terrible. Was it 2 or 4? I think. It's awful. And we really, really, really need that strike. And I was just saying to James off air there before we came on, I just really hope that what we're seeing at Arsenal is that transition to being good, you know, to be great again. I hope in the summer that we bring in this. I hope in the summer we bring in a top class midfielder and a top class striker. Because once we've got those two elements, we ain't far off. I really don't think we are far off. This was in the chat there. 2 from open play in his last 21 Premier League appearances. I mean, that's shocking. Do you know? It is shocking. And you look back and you think, well, why did we, you know, why have we let Aubameyang go? And you know, why isn't Nikita getting, Eddie Nketiah getting a chance? Let's talk about that. James, why when you've got an Eddie Nketiah on the bench? I mean, look, there's no comparison into, you know, quality of Nketiah and Lacazette. You know, Lacazette's obviously done a lot more. He's a lot older and he's a lot more experienced. Nketiah's got a lot more to learn. But surely with what we're seeing, Arteta wants to bring the younger player in. And, you know, from his signings, he's bringing in a lot of younger players. Do you think it's Nketiah's hesitation to sign a new contract that he's not getting started? Or do you think Arteta really believes that, you know, Lacazette is his man, even though has just given us quite a damning stat there. 2 goals from open play in the last 21.
I mean, if I'm being brutally honest, I think Nketiah is only here for contingency purposes. I don't think he's here for any other reason. If we had another backup striker or if we had a little bit more depth up front, then we'd have accepted one of those bids that we got, supposedly one of those bids that we got from, say, Crystal Palace in January. For him to still be here is just ludicrous. I rate what he's done in the League Cup. Those goals he got against Sunderland were really good. They're all pretty much from about 3 yards out, and that's the type of striker he is. And I think, you know, we would get him in those situations, but the last opportunity I can think of that Eddie Nketiah had in the Premier League was that miss against Everton. And that's the one that really sticks out in my mind. And when you factor in that he doesn't score in the Premier League or very rarely scores in the Premier League, but then also doesn't do the things that Lacazette actually brings to this team, like the work rate, like bringing others into the game. I mean, it sounds silly to say, but I would be moderately satisfied if we got, this is only on the basis that we got top four, but if Lacazette scored no goals, but it meant that Martinelli, Odegaard, Smith-Rowe, Saka got more goals because of him providing or getting pre-assists, bringing them into the game. And that's what I think a lot of people don't give him enough credit for, because I think the way he's playing, he's not necessarily always going to be in those goal scoring opportunities because he's playing a ball through to someone like Martinelli. Chris, the goal you reference against West Ham, created by Lacazette, coming in deeper, opening up the space for Martinelli. And that's exactly what he's doing a lot more of now. So he's not always the one bursting, busting the gut to get into the box. It's the people around him. So I think that's the one of the main reasons why he's not getting as many goals, but it's also down to those opportunities that he's missing. So it's obvious we need to upgrade him, but I think he is doing some good things. And in answer to your question, I just don't rate Nketiah, to be totally transparent with you.
Me too, mate. Me too. Can I just jump in on that? So I think we change. The problem with Nketiah is, number one, he doesn't have the requisite quality anyway. I think if you're going to look for an alternative to Lacazette, then you have to look at somebody like, people talk about Martinelli, but if you take Martinelli, I think we talked about this last week, didn't we, Craig? If you take Martinelli out from left, where he can make those runs from in, then does he make the same runs in the same angles from a centre forward positions? I don't know. I've heard people talk about Nicolas Pepe. I would actually rather try that.
Well, yeah.
I'd rather see someone like Nicolas Pepe, because he can receive the ball with back to goal. Like Nicolas Pepe, what are the challenges that we've seen from Nicolas Pepe? Sometimes when he's shunted out wide on the right, and he doesn't always beat his man. But technically, when he receives the ball, he's quite strong. So I think he could do a similar sort of job where he can receive the ball. His pass distribution isn't that bad, but Arteta doesn't seem to fancy him. I mean, I would personally be looking at that. It sounds to me like they have they've eyed up Martinelli as a centre forward, but I feel like I'd rather keep him out wide in that position. Try somebody like Nicolas Pepe, because he can control the ball. All right, there are instances where his control lets him down, but when that normally happens, it's when he's running onto the ball, whereas Lacazette doesn't run onto any balls whatsoever. And I think Nicolas Pepe can spot similar passes to that Lacazette can do. But also, we've got a guy that's a bit more athletic, and also, he doesn't, after 60 minutes, seem like he's blowing out of his arsehole like Lacazette does, having had 2 weeks off sitting on a beach.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Look, Nicolas Pepe, I understand that Nicolas Pepe is not everyone's cup of tea. I understand that a lot of people, me included, think that he's kind of wasted out on the wing. I'm not saying that he's the answer to our... I'm not saying for a minute that he's the answer to our problems. But when you've got a player like him sitting on the bench doing nothing, and like you said, Chris, you can see Lacazette, you know, blowing out of his... I mean, I can't believe... I mean, I find it quite strange that he brought on Nketiah instead of Pepe. I'd just love to know why he keeps playing a player who clearly wants to leave, who's clearly not going to sign a new contract, why he keeps playing him. It's dumbfounding to me. I don't know. But what I will give credit for, Arteta credit for, James, is the substitution that he made when we went down to 10 men. took Saka off, put Rob Holding on. And, you know, it turned out to be, you know, a genius move. We've seen managers do some quite weird things when we've gone down to 10 men back in the day. I can remember we went down to 10. Was it we went down to 10 men at Anfield? And instead of bringing on we had a big defender on the bench. I can't remember who it was now, but he brought on a midfielder and they got a free kick in the last minute and went up the other end and scored the winner. I'd have to see if I can find the highlights to that because it was at Anfield. It was either we got someone sent off and instead of putting on a new defender, a central midfielder came on and they scored from the free kick and won the game. So a bit of credit to Arteta there, James.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's fairly simple thing to do now though because we've got so much experience going down to 10 men. I mean we really learned a lot from that game at Anfield, and I think you've got to give credit to the defense for being so calm in those situations, for doing the dirty work really. And I'm referencing Rob Holding in that because, you know, there's not a lot of, we haven't really got defenders like him at Arsenal. He's kind of the only one. I mean, we've got Gabriel and Ben White, who Gabriel in particular, I think, is the perfect hybrid of an old-school centre-half, but also the modern centre-half in terms of playing it out from the back. I think it was his ball that put Lacazette through in that chance that he should have scored. So he was incredible in that game, and he's been incredible pretty much every game he's played this season. But Ben White alongside him, so good at playing it out from the back, so good with the ball at his feet, can put in a good tackle as well. They're just such a good balanced centre-half pairing. But then you've got Rob Holding, who's just no-nonsense, old-fashioned, and in those situations is great. And we all know why he won't get into this starting 11, but I know a lot of people don't rate him. I know a lot of people don't think he belongs anywhere near a top 10 Premier League side, but I guarantee if he was playing for a Newcastle or any team in the bottom 10 of the Premier League, and he was doing what he did in that Wolves game every single game, because a lot of it would be back to the Wolves stuff, people would be talking about him as a top defender. And I think that's, I'm not going to, you know, say that he's a top defender, but I think he's a very useful defender. If he's happy to be a bit part player in this Arsenal team, kind of play that Pascal Seguin role, I'm very happy for him to carry on at the club for, you know, the next few years, because he's such a useful player to have in the team. And when you think, we've got William Saliba coming in next season, we've got three defenders that are very, very modern, that are very good at playing it out with their feet. And then you've got Rob Holding, which is the polar opposite to all of them. Mm. And it's a really nice variation of centre-backs.
Do you know what I was just going to say, just to add on to that, Craig and Cookie? One thing was actually said on Twitter, which made me chuckle. It was like Rob Holding doing exactly what he does best, which is be a League One defender, which kind of maybe is a little bit harsh. But I think the kind of concept around it, you're right. And what you've just said, James, is absolutely spot on. Like, we've seen this time and time again where you see goalkeepers who make lots of saves every week playing for teams towards the bottom of the league. And everyone says, oh, they're absolutely stunning. What a great goalkeeper. Imagine what would happen if they were playing for Man United or Arsenal or Liverpool, whatever it was. Well, the reality was, is if they were playing for Arsenal, Liverpool, Man United, is that they'd have nothing to do for most of the, well, you can't say that about us recently, but they'd have nothing to do for a lot of the games. And so it's about concentration. And then when you are called upon doing it, Rob Holding is a good, decent, solid penalty box defender. And when we need, he's the absolute archetypal perfect. We need to play with a back three and we need somebody in the middle just going to head everything away. Because that's basically all Wolves did. Their plan was to go, let's get it ball out wide and get the ball into the box. And it did make me chuckle that they got so irate, because all we did is apply the same tactics that they applied from minute one, which was back three with wing backs. Mm. Difficult to break down. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's talk about the strangest sending off. I'll stay with you, Chris. The strangest sending off I've ever seen. I've been watching football since my first football match when I was eight. So I've been watching football since I was 8 years. I've never seen a sending off as strange as that. I haven't had a chance to really, to be honest with you, it was just so weird. I was kind of just sat back and said, how has that just actually happened? Martinelli pushes the player, the referee waves play on. He goes up the other end, and then he pushes another player in the back. Then the referee comes over and books him twice. But surely, if you've given, this is the way I'm looking at it. I don't know if it's right or not, or whether you agree. But surely, if you've waved play on and given the advantage, he has to be brought back and booked for the original offence. And the second offence kind of is gone. It's, you know, it's, which I don't even think it was a booking anyway, to be honest with you. Yeah. It was such a strange decision. I've never seen anything like that before.
It's utterly bizarre. What about this for a scenario, hypothetical scenario? So Martinelli does that. Look, I mean, if we break down the different parts of it, well, number one, Podence throws the ball whilst his feet are off the ground. So that's a foul throw anyway. Yeah. All right, you can argue that maybe Martinelli's pushed him. But if it's a foul throw, you can't play advantage because he's just done a foul throw. So number one, you've just made a foul throw. So that's got to be brought back. So you retake the throw anyway. So first mistake from Michael Oliver. Number two is, he hasn't given Martinelli the opportunity. He hasn't, by booking somebody, you're essentially saying, this is a warning for your behavior. It is a warning. You can't say it's a warning and then a second warning and then you're off, because then, okay, so what are the rules? So let's put another scenario in. So it's a yellow card for the foul throw push. It's a foul on there. But imagine if he fouled the player and the player carried on going and Martinelli chased after him and he went down to the corner flag, Martinelli barged him over again. What's he going to do? Say, that's a yellow card for that. That's a yellow card for that. And you can have a third yellow card as well. And now you're off. What's he going to do from that? All right, I'm going to give you two red cards. The logic does not make sense. No, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Michael Oliver was ruled by his heart rather than his head. He got the hump because of, people have said he'd got the hump because of some of the time-wasting gamesmanship. I mean, that's really wound me up, because I go to the Arsenal every odd week. And let me tell you, any team that isn't in the top five or six teams in the league come to the Emirates, and by half time they're time wasting. I've seen Tim Krul on 20 minutes walk from one side of the six yard box to the other in the first half. Yeah, and Arsenal fans are going, what's going on here? What's going on here, ref? They do nothing. But then they do a token booking in the last minute for a goalkeeper, time wasting for the whole game. It's utterly ludicrous. So
really, Michael Oliver, really. Yeah,
has been ruled with his head and his heart. Sorry. Well, I've got my soapbox now.
Yeah. I'll go back to what I say about referees. It's long gone since the referee is just there to referee a game now. The referee wants to get involved now. He wants to be in the paper. He wants to be the headline. And for me, that was Michael Oliver's way of going, how can I get in the paper tomorrow? Because this is quite a boring game, isn't it? I'll do that. You know, and Bob's your uncle. There you go. We're all talking about him. He's the main focus of the game all of a sudden for that stupid, stupid decision. Danny come in there. He said that Keith Hackett, obviously the ex-Premier League referee, absolutely slated him for it. Was has come in there and he says Burnley waste time from minute one.
They do. They were doing it at the Emirates. They were doing it at the Emirates from the first half. I saw it with my own bleeding eyes. It drove me potty. And so then to see Oliver getting the hump with Gabriel on 60 minutes, I feel like saying, right, when you next come to the Emirates, mate, and you referee an Arsenal versus a Wolves or a Southampton or a Everton or a West Ham, and they're doing it, apply the same rules.
Yeah, exactly. Consistency. This one comes in from Cliff. Thank you very much, Cliff, for your kind donation. Mikel Arteta has the hump with Pepe, so it would be his ego over the team again. Gab only saw time because Mikel Arteta had the hump with Aubameyang. It's a piss take. To be honest, it's kind of a bit of truth there, really. I mean, because, you know, Martinelli wouldn't have got his go in the team if Aubameyang had behaved himself. But then perhaps if Aubameyang had behaved himself, he'd still be banging in goals for us. So swings and roundabouts, Cliff. Swings and roundabouts. Thanks for your donation, mate. James, the Martinelli sending off. What did you make of that?
It's mental, isn't it? It's just, I couldn't believe what I was seeing when I saw it in real time. It's strange when you think about the amount of times we've been to places like Stoke, Burnley, and you see those types of challenges countless times throughout a game.
Yeah.
And it just nothing happens. Like nothing happens. You think back over the past 10, 15 years, how many times that's happened. And, you know, how many times in recent seasons where things have gone against us.
One, sorry to interrupt you there. One that sticks in my memory is when we were playing Norwich at Carrow Road and some fella, I forget who it was, but he bundled Alexis Sanchez into a bloody brick camera hut. You remember? Remember that? No, never got booked for that either. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. Sorry to interrupt. Go on.
No, that's all right, mate. I was just going to say, you know, I'm not saying that we're a team full of meatheads anymore, but, you know, given that we've got a bit of a tougher team, you look at our back five, they're big guys, you know, they're pretty no-nonsense. And then you look at some players that have got a bit of bite about them, like Gabriel Martinez. We're not really, I'm not saying we're a hard team. I'm not saying we're a soft team. I think we're somewhere in the middle when we play the game quite intelligently. I mean, it sounds silly given that we've got so many sendings off recently. But it's, I think we're starting to find that balance a little bit more between when to play hard and when to be intelligent. And I don't think referees, it sounds silly, I don't think they like it. I don't like that we're, you know, not playing the Arsenal way sometimes, and we've got a bit about us now. And it kind of falls into a sort of unintentional bias against us almost. And I think it's kind of, there's always been something about Arsenal, whether it be refereeing, whether it be the media, going off on a massive tangent here, but you just look at the way media outlets talk about us when things are going well. You look at the refereeing decisions that go against us when things are going well. It's just really, really weird. I'm not sure why it is, because you don't see it with, you hardly see it with Man City, maybe because no one cares about them that much. You don't see it that often with Liverpool. You hardly ever see it with Liverpool. But it's always Arsenal. Always seems to be Arsenal.
Always Arsenal. Chris, are we refereed differently? I was speaking to James about this off air just before we, you know, before we came on. For me, it was the game at Old Trafford. I mean, look, I'm sure there's older fans out there that will be able to tell me loads of other times it happened. But for me, it was the game at Old Trafford, 50 wins. You know, how we came away from that game with no points, how Manchester United came away from that game with 11 players on the pitch will always be a question that I can never, ever, ever find an answer to. And I think ever since then, Arsenal have been refereed differently. And has it, in your opinion, got anything to do with about what Arsene Wenger said? You know, what Arsene Wenger, I think he had a press conference once and he actually went to town on the referees, didn't he? And ever since then, it seems like there's been this vendetta against Arsenal. When you see some of the decisions that have gone against us, and I always bring up that David Luiz one at Wolves last year. I mean, how has VAR not overturned that red card? It's absolutely amazing. And when people say to me, "Oh, you bloody Arsenal fans, you're always moaning, you're always moaning." When I actually sit them down and say, "Right, okay," I actually done it at work the other day. There was a fella, "Oh, you're always moaning, Roy." So I said, "Right, come here, sit down." And I played him a compilation that was on YouTube of all the bad decisions we've had. And he actually went, "Oh, yeah, all right, you might have a point." You know, so...
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's just, it's ludicrous. And I totally believe there's a vendetta against Arsenal. I really, really do. Because even some of the challenges going in on Saturday, you know, no bookings. What about the one on Martinelli that James brought up?
Kilman.
Yeah, that's a yellow card.
Do you know what's interesting? Do you remember the game against Swansea at the Emirates? It was John Moss who was the ref, and Granit Xhaka was sent off, and it was right by the touchline. And it was basically, I can't remember who the Swansea player were, but he just did the old push and run beyond him, and Granit Xhaka brought him down. It's your textbook around the halfway line, yellow card. Everyone sees it. All right, Granit Xhaka's got a yellow card there. It's one of those good yellow cards to have. John Moss, nope, straight red. That decision process has never happened again since. I'm sure someone even said to me they changed the rules so that because of that incident. It feels like Arsenal are a test case sometimes, doesn't it? It's what exactly, how can we test the limits of what is acceptable? Maybe we should try two sendings off within one passage of play. Let's give that a go. Maybe we should see if we can find a reason why kicking somebody in the head, a la Tomiyasu getting a boot to the face by Godfrey, you know, because he's looking away, you've then got half-time punters. You've got VAR saying, no case to answer. And then you've got Gary Neville bizarrely coming out and saying, I can see what he's done. He's done that on purpose. I can see why they didn't give it, though. It just blows your mind.
Yeah, hello, yeah.
James McArthur.
Poor old Bukayo Saka got volleyed into the top corner against Crystal Palace.
Yeah, you know? From McArthur. It's bizarre. There is definitely an unconscious bias. I've got a theory on that. I feel like we've been seeing, we've seen the same referees refereeing our games for at least 10 years. They're doing the same things. They know the same players. We don't have players that are... We've got Bukayo Saka as a full England international, but he's not up to that point where, you know, the old Steven Gerrard or Paul Scholes or Harry Kane, put your arm around the ref and you're like, oh, you're all right. You're all right, Michael. How's the kids? That sort of stuff. We don't have those types of players. I think there's that part of it. I think also we're just an easier target. I think we are an easier target. And I didn't realise how obvious it was until Granit Xhaka did that article in The Athletic where he said that one of his teammates in an Arsenal shirt was told by a referee on the pitch, oh, you know Granit Xhaka, he always loses his head. So I think that was a reason why he got a booking. You know, Granit Xhaka's cards are already all right. He's had instances, not very often, but he does have instances where he makes mistakes. But Granit Xhaka's cards are already marked before he even steps onto the pitch. And we've got a few of those players, and that's Arsenal. Arsenal, our cards are sometimes already marked before we get onto the pitch.
Yeah, so that is a good point. I mean, that is a great point. Because, you know, Granit Xhaka is obviously, you know, he's the easy target, isn't he? Oh, as soon as he goes in, I'll give him a yellow card because everyone else does it. So, no, you know, even the Arsenal fans are going to go, oh, that's all right, because it was Granit Xhaka. It's a real weird one, and something I'll never get over about how clearly different we are refereed. It's just so clear. It's not even funny anymore. You're not even trying to hide it anymore. Anyway, we came away from Wolves 1-0, 3 points. Great result. Great performance by everyone. Unfortunately, Martinelli getting sent off, which means he will miss the next game against Brentford, I believe, isn't it, at the weekend? So, Smith Rowe on the left, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Lacazette and Saka. We'll come to that at the end. Stanley Kroenke, our last topic of the evening. Stan Kroenke, Super Bowl champion. Well, he's not a Super Bowl champion. His team's a Super Bowl champion. A lot of people mentioning him in social media. Oh, give us some money, give us some money, give us some money. You spent all that money on the Rams. Why don't you give us some money? Is he really as bad as an owner as people make him out to be, right? In April 07, he came on board and he had 9.9% of the club. September 08, he went up to 29.9% ownership of the club. April the 11th, up to 62.89% owner of the club. And then in August 2018, as we all know, launched a bid and now owns 100% of the club. Now, since he's owned 100% of the club, we've spent £370 million. So, is it we're buying poorly? Or what is it, James? £370 million. I know you said so. You touched on it a little bit there before we came on air. So, if you want to go ahead and say what you said. Now, those facts came from a lad called Adam_Keys on Twitter. So, if you want to go and follow him, very good account. Likes to post some nice statistics up there. So, James, is he really this bad owner that everyone's making him out to be? What's your opinion on him?
Stan Kroenke in particular, as an individual, I don't think he's got much of a passion for Arsenal. And I don't mean that in a really narcissistic way. I think Arsenal is very much a business for him. I think he's a very big sports fan. I think that's very obvious by, you know, the various franchises that he's got, LA Rams being the prime example. And I think he's obviously got a very deep passion for American football. But in terms of the Premier League, in terms of Arsenal, it's kind of like a project for Josh Kroenke, which I think is probably the best possible outcome it could be for us as supporters, because I think KSE is obviously an organisation that looks after various different clubs, as I just mentioned, across the world. But Josh Kroenke, his focus is on Arsenal, and I much prefer that, you know, his sole focus is on Arsenal rather than us being really ambiguous about what is Stan Kroenke doing? What's his actual role? What is KSE? Whereas we know Josh Kroenke looks after Arsenal. Yeah. And I think he's kind of starting to understand now that, you know, there's a lot of passion from supporters in English football. He's just come out and done this interview saying that the passion for the English soccer game isn't even close or comparable to the passion that you have with the Super Bowl, with American football. And, you know, I don't want to say, you know, that's the fact, that's the case. But I think you'd be hard pressed to find a football fan in England that would say otherwise, because, you know, you've got fans supporting clubs in League Two, the National League, they're dedicated to their football team. You know, for so many people, the weekend football is the only thing that keeps them going. So it's a huge burning passion for so many people. And I think, he's starting to come around to that a bit more. And given the money we've spent, seen a lot of stuff on Twitter that's Arsenal's money rather than KSE's money. And I'm very inclined to believe that. But the fact of the matter is we're spending money. I don't think we've spent it always in the right places prior to the previous summer, where we've maybe spent it quite poorly, not just on transfer fees, but, you know, on the wages of someone like Willian. But given that we've had such a good summer last year, brought in all the right players, players that are going to be here for hopefully the next 5+ years. If we had another summer like that, we don't need to be talking about KSE spending loads and loads of money.
Absolutely.
Like we're, you know, 150 million quid away from being there, maybe. Yeah. Like if we get a striker and a top midfielder, and then we can just plug the gaps where we need reinforcements, you know, backup right back, maybe a backup wide player. It's all we need. You know, the starting 11, as you correctly pointed out earlier, is there. We just need, you know, that long-term Granit Xhaka replacement. We need that long-term striker. And the rest of the 11 picks itself. So, I think if we continue to spend money in the right ways, then we don't need to be asking Stan and Josh for more money, because everything will be in place. And I think they're certainly doing a much better job than they have done previously in terms of being vocal. You know, they've done a much better job in that sense. And I think the whole Super League debacle really opened their eyes to what this fan base is capable of, when you had, you know, Akel Vias of the AST coming on and telling Josh Kroenke that he should leave the club. You know, that was a big, big wake-up call. So massive respect to the AST for doing that. Massive respect to Akel for saying that to his face, because that's a bold thing to do. I don't think you'd get many LA Rams supporters saying that. It's getting better, but it's still not perfect.
Just before you come in there, Chris, I just want to bring some points in. This one comes in from FT Music TV. We spent 150 million in the summer, and he would have happily opened up the checkbook again for Mikel Arteta last month. Again, the argument is there about, was it his money, was it our money? You know, this one comes in from GB. The KSE problem has been their absenteeism and inability to put a structure in place to ensure that hirings they make are accountable. This season with Josh is the first where it is different. And this is a very good one. I like this one. Arsenal is Josh's project. Only good thing is that Josh has been trying to understand the culture and connect with people. Now, that is very true. You know, going on that interview that he made during the week, he is definitely trying to, like James says about what he said about, I was really surprised about what he said, that, you know, you'd be hard fought to find a passionate, you know, American football fan and a football fan. I mean, he's right. I thought the Super Bowl was a pottery program, but like he's really trying to understand what it means to be an Arsenal fan. Chris, would you agree with that, or are you on the side of James, or and a lot of other people are saying, oh, but it's only our own money, he's not putting his own money in his hand in his pocket?
Well, let me play the role of the prosecution.
For those who are listening in audio, Chris has just presented a dossier.
I have many problems with KSE. And a lot of it, the fabulous listeners have already pointed out. So I'm going to be repeating some of this stuff. KSE have not put we don't know that they've put their own money in because they have delisted or whatever the financial term is for their accounts. We don't get much visibility on it other than what's on Companies House. So we don't know how much they've invested. So to say that they've put money in is wrong because we don't know that. I ask myself, who does it benefit for that information to not be in the public domain? It benefits KSE because then they can position things from a PR perspective in their favor. Oh, look, Arsenal have spent all of this money. Look what KSE are doing. They're bankrolling it. Well, maybe not. Maybe KSE have given, we've heard stories of bridging loans, of KSE saying, well, we'll front the bill for it all. But they're not physically putting up their money. They're just effectively leveraging Arsenal to say, look, we're good for it when they want to get these bridging loans out. So they've not, as far as we're aware, they've not spent their own money. they've delisted from all of the accounts so that we don't get visibility of that information. In terms of their running of the club, we all agree that things are starting to get better now and some good decisions have happened in terms of some of the players that have been brought in. But let's not forget, 2018 was 4 years ago, and we've also had eighth place finishes. We've also overseen some shocking decision making. We've seen Kia Drabshan waltz in, steal a little bit of the family china, and waltz out again with his bags filled full of money. And that's all happened on KSE's watch. I think KSE's problem has been their, as somebody's already said, their inability to appoint the right people. And that comes from absentee owners, from not really paying attention to what's going on, from looking at us from across the pond and thinking, oh, they're okay, they're just ticking over. And you, in elite sport, you only have to do that for a very short period of time before that ends up being a real problem. That ends up seeing the car crash that we've seen. They own a lot of sports franchises. They've got a lot of knowledge. But I don't know what that knowledge has done in the 4 years. I mean, we've only, like I said, only this season have we really started to see a turnaround. So we've had 4 years of KSE's knowledge, management consultancy fees even, that they took out at some stage in the club. And I don't see the benefits of all of that sporting knowledge. So we've got absentee owners. They've got all of this sporting knowledge that they don't seem to be able to translate into success. They've made everything a little bit more murky and cloudy because they're not sharing and they're not transparent with us on how Arsenal are spending its money. And with regards to Josh as well, Daddy's a rich man. Daddy can pay for quite good PR lessons. I reckon if my daddy was a rich man, a rich, rich man, he could pay for some pretty good PR lessons for me. And I can sit in front of cameras and say very nice things that don't really mean anything. So all in all, I think my case for the prosecution should probably finish there because I'm waffling. But I think it's fair to say my love of KFC is very nice. Yeah. Very, very different.
No, that wasn't waffle at all, mate. That was actually a brilliant, brilliant section. Again, you know, it's hard to do, you know, it is hard to disagree with you, but then I can hear the other opinions then of, you know, when I read Twitter or I'm talking to other Arsenal fans or I'm talking to football fans in general, I can hear their side of the story as well and say, well, you know, I'm the type of fan that won't go into that kind of thing like you've just done there, Chris, right? Even though it's brilliant that what you've just said, and you know, it's opened my eyes up a bit. Perhaps I should do a bit more research, like that. But I just want the players on the pitch. I don't care where it's got to come from or who's going to pay for it. Just put them on the bloody pitch, and let's win some football matches. Because like I said before, I think I said it last week. I will not watch that All or Nothing documentary. I'm not interested. I am not interested one bit what goes on behind the doors, 3 o'clock Saturday or Thursday, 8 o'clock or whatever it is. That's the only time I'm interested in watching anything about Arsenal. Brentford at the weekend, Martinelli out, James. You know, I suppose the team, like you said, picks itself. Tommy Yasu, I believe, back in training. The only change I can see really, mate, is Smith Rowe out on the left for Martinelli. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, pretty much. And I'd love to see Pepe get half an hour in this game if things are going well, because I think he's coming right off the back of a red hot AFCON, where he's had a great tournament, and I'd really like him to keep that momentum going, even if it's just half an hour off the bench. I don't think he's going to get a starting berth in this team. And, you know, I'm inclined to agree with that in a minute, not just because I've got anything against Pepe, but that three behind Lacazette, Smith Rowe, Ødegaard, Saka. Yeah. We saw it a few times earlier on in the season. I think we saw it away at Leicester, where it performed really, really well. Yeah. And that's as mouth-watering as having Martinelli in there. And I think Smith Rowe brings something so different to this team that Martinelli does. Similarly, in terms of driving runs, but creating space, arriving late in the box. I'd love to see him start, love to see him get a goal, and then have someone more chaotic in Pepe come on later in the game. And I think the one player I'd be looking to take off is probably Saka, because he has played so much football. Yeah. Granted, he did get a bit of a break against Wolves, but given that we've got Wolves at home, which is a huge game, if we could get another scrappy 1-0 win there, if we win at Wolves away, win at Brentford at home, then beat Wolves again, that would be a fantastic run of results, given that we've got some more winnable games coming up after that, and then we've got a very tough April. So really important we keep that momentum going, and I've got every faith in the team to do it. You know, it's easy to look at games like Burnley and think that we might have a hiccup, but I do think that was very much a hangover of the injuries we had. We've got a proper midfield now with Xhaka and Partey back. I know some people don't rate Xhaka, but I think that's definitely our strongest midfield too, and it does perform well. Proper defence, exciting front four. We've got someone who can genuinely change the game in Pepe on the bench. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. Mm. I'd love us to win 2 or 3-0, maybe even more, but as long as we get 3 points, as long as we play well, that's all I want to see. You know, that game at Wolves will mean absolutely nothing if we don't capitalise and beat a very, very poor Brentford side at the moment. I mean, Brentford are kind of in that weird limbo time in the table where they've kind of got enough points to stay up.
Yeah.
But now they're playing really badly, spiraling into such a poor run of results. But they've still not got to worry too much because they're still quite significantly above the relegation zone. Mm. I think we're playing them at a good time. And I just hope, we get the business done.
Isn't that called doing a Charlton?
yeah, called doing a Charlton. I'd like to agree with James about a 2 or 3-0 win. But in the back of my mind, this is shouting banana skin. Especially after, you know, it would just be so Arsenal to go away to another Premier League team, win 1-0 away from home, play with 10 men for half an hour, and then get home. Everyone's up for it. And then, you know, I'm not even going to say what we all know happens. Look, we should be expected to beat Brentford. We're a better side than Brentford, but that's not how football works. And, you know, the three of us, we know that. But what would you expect against Brentford?
Yeah, do you want me to cheer you up?
Yeah, go on.
So we're going to change our style back to a more familiar style with the arrival of Tomiyasu, because the way that he plays and the style that he plays compared to Cedric means that our setup changes dynamically. If you think about the Wolves game, one of the things that Wolves did, and Brentford, you know, everyone's got data scientists and all of that malarkey these days. Wolves targeted us by playing diagonals. So the amount of times, you remember the ball was going over to Tierney's side and he was isolated? Well, you can't do those diagonals to Tomiyasu if he's playing, because he wins the ball. If Tomiyasu's playing, then we can shift when we're in possession into a back three. So it means that we shouldn't, my hope, touch wood, is that we're not as exposed. And it also means Tierney can get forward. So I don't think Tierney had that great a game against Wolves. So he's going to be given more license to get forward than he did against Wolves, which gives us extra overloads on that side. Remember the game at the Emirates, North London Derby last season, Tierney and Smith Rowe together, absolutely fantastic, because they were close together, creating a partnership. Brentford, my hope, is that they're going to, I don't think they're a team that sits in. So my hope is that they give us space because they try to come at us. And if Tierney and Smith Rowe get that opportunity, then there's options on that side. We've got a star boy on the other side, Saka, who, again, give him some space, give him some time. And I think he's starting to build a better connection with Tomiyasu. And we've started to see those little diagonals. So you can almost picture it, Ramsdale to White. White, Tomiyasu to Partey, Saka, you know, these diagonals going up the pitch on that side. It's quite exciting to watch. And so that's what I'm getting excited for at the weekend. It's Tierney and Smith Rowe as the connectors, the connection on that left-hand side. And it is Saka, probably with more Odegaard, actually, to be fair, than Tomiyasu. But we've got the stability of Tomiyasu back in. We've got a more the more settled side and the side that has been rock solid and has collected those 11 clean sheets that you've talked about. My hope is that I'm not going to say this will be easy. It won't be easy. But my hope is that start from clean sheet. And then it's just about finding that those pockets of space and the players like Odegaard, Smith Rowe, Tierney and Saka stepping up. And as James said, wouldn't it be nice to see Pepe, because guy's a finisher. So hopefully that's cheered you up a little
bit. Absolutely can't disagree with you anymore. That brings us to the end of this week's Four Men and a Mic. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you all of you for staying along and listening to us. Thank you also if you're listening to us on audio. Thank you very much indeed. James, thank you very much for your company this evening. As always, an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome, mate. Thank you for having me on as always. And up the Arsenal.
See you next week. See you next week. Chris, thank you very much, sir, for your time and your superb analysis once again. Thank you very much, sir. An absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much. I am not celebrating. I'm going deadpan. This is how I say thank you. Good night.
Same old Arsenal. We'll be back on Friday night with Amanda's Always Arsenal show. Her guests will be Danny, hopefully, if he's not got a dicky stomach on Friday, and Mervyn as well. So Friday night, 9 o'clock, the Always Arsenal show with Amanda. Make sure you're there. Check out, obviously, Twitter. We'll let you know when she goes live and all that malarkey. We will see you again next week. Until I do... Thank you very much. Until I see you again, up the Arsenal. Be nice to each other and all that. Bye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.